Hello, folks, and welcome to the Metallica Report. I'm Stefan Shirazi, editor of the band So What magazine.
And I'm Renee Richardson, director of philanthropy for Metallica's foundation, All Within My Hands. This is your official weekly Metallica podcast, the only inside source, bringing you all the news from the band's HQ and studios deep in the heart of Northern California. Oh my God, Steph, I have been getting funky to some infectious grooves the
very
past couple
good.
Of days.
It's good to hear. I like it.
Yeah, in anticipation of talking to Rob today, just stoked. The music is fun, and I'm hoping you will add some cool grooves to the Metallica Report playlist.
Of course, the playlist will always include some flavors of that current episode, and it'll also include, you know, wider flavors that go on in and around our camp, our world, you know, so yep. Absolutely. I will honor your request and make sure there's some good shit in there. How's that?
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. And you'll find the Metallica Report playlist on Spotify, of course. And by the way, thanks to our friends on Spotify, because they were weighing in on the question we asked, which was, what collaboration would you like to see any member of Metallica do with another artist? And I love the responses. Matthew Toner, of course, wants to see another performance with Lady Gaga. He says the first one was really good. Terry Thomas says, the band covering Taylor Swift's Anti-Hero, and I quote, would love to hear James sing that with a few word changes, made gooder to be fair, end quote. And then wow. Jorge Mendoza, he says, I'd really dig a Hetfield-Sturgill Simpson collaboration. And this is for you, Steph.
Yes.
He loves Lulu.
Oh, that's very good. Yes, Jorge, you're a top man and you've got good visionary taste. Hang in there, my friend, because we are going to be forebearers and forerunners of the Lulu is a Legendary Record group. So you're in early. Now, Sean Glass wants Kirk to play with Manowar, which when I visualize it, that's just madness, really. And I found myself wondering if Kirk would have to wear a furry loincloth and brandish a battle axe as well, while Tan Man says Kirk, Hammett and Ozzy together. That's what Tan Man wants. And of course, yeah. That had my mind wondering, you know, to RT coming in on the bass and the three of them throwing down together. Yeah, it's that would be cool.
Many good ideas. If only we could see them come to life. But let me close out with one more from Kieran.mc. He wants to hear James and Jerry Cantrell doing an acoustic album.
Yes.
Adding Kirk playing with the Black Keys would be a great collaboration. And one more thing, Lars drumming on a Deep Purple album. And of course, Robin Henry Rollins on a hardcore punk band. Now,
that was two other things.
I know, sorry. I was getting a little ahead of myself, but I want to meet Kieran.mc because we need to hang. I have similar visions.
And I think forevermore, we will refer to Kieran.mc as Kieran.mc. So that's what I like.
I just read them like I see them.
Well, let's see if Kieran.mc has a playlist on Spotify. Let's see if we can dig one out for him and we can see what he's up to, because he certainly had some good ideas. Everyone had some great ideas. These are really cool. And just to be sure, folks, if you are just tuning in and caught a whiff of these unions, I've got to make clear they are courtesy of our Spotify listeners' imaginations. There's no news here. There's no practical stuff. This is dreamscapes we're talking about. Dream world. So let's just be clear. We love them. Thanks as always. Keep on coming to us. When we throw out the questions, we dig your answers. So keep on coming. Thank you. Let's get into what's happening this week. Yeah, shall we?
Yes, right. Please.
This week, we're going to hear from James Hetfield about cigars, why he loves them, and we're going to get into the idea behind the brand new S84 Shade to Black cigar.
Ooh.
It was recently unveiled by Drew Estate in conjunction with Blackened.
And in a matter of days, Mr. Rob Trujillo is going to be taken off to Australia for a few shows with his neighborhood homeboys, Infectious Grooves, as we mentioned earlier. So funky. They played two gigs last weekend at Garden Grove Amphitheater in California on the 23rd and 24th, and they're going to be doing a one-off at the UC Theater in Berkeley on April 27th. So we're going to get into all things Infectious with Rob.
What an RT thing too. I mean, because he just loves playing and jamming and grooving and reconnecting.
Yeah.
And hey, we'll get into that in a little while. Let's start with cigars, right? James's love of cigars is clear for all to see. And it's even clearer now, given how much visibility the band have during M72 gigs, when you can literally watch the guy sit down and light up between songs.
And I think it was going to be a matter of time right before James developed his own blended cigar. And with a nose in mind like Rob Dietrich on the case, a worthy partner was always going to be found. For those who want to know about the actual cigars, here's a little backstory. Jonathan Drew and Drew Estate, their cigar makers, have been creating their top-notch cigars in Nicaragua since the late 90s by way of Brooklyn. This is kind of cool. They founded their company in the Dumbo neighborhood. That's down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass for those in the know. In 1998, Jonathan moved to Estelí, Nicaragua without more than a few words of Spanish. He was sleeping on a floor mattress, but he had this vision to make sure Drew Estate spearheaded the modern day cigar culture. Many stories and many legends later, over a dozen popular brands are produced from their La Gran Fabrica Drew Estate, which is in Estelí, Nicaragua.
And it says here that their mission is, quote, the rebirth of cigars. Well, there's little doubt that they're staying true to that command statement. Besides the fact they obviously know what they're doing with these things, it's very clear. It's of absolutely no surprise at all that Dietrich and Metallica partnered up with them, because frankly, Rob, Metallica, Drew Estate, they're all a bunch of mad mavericks who love a few adventures outside the box. And also, Rob's been friends with Jonathan for over a decade. There has already been the Blackened M81 cigar collaboration, but this S84 Shade to Black is, according to those who know their cigars, which I should be very clear about, is not me. I'm not a cigar smoker.
Me
so
either.
Don't take my word for it. I have checked with experts, though, who verify what I'm about to say. This is a different kind of beast altogether. And there is a brotherhood of smokers out there, which James will shortly get into from his perspective. But, you know, before we got into all of this stuff, I think the first thing I wanted to ask James was something that a whole bunch of us have wanted to put to him, but, you know, have sort of backed off asking, I suppose. And that was whether smoking cigars has affected his voice.
There's a lot of people around me that are concerned about that and the health and whatnot. And it has not affected it that I know of. I feel that I'm kind of singing the best I have in a long time, and I'm doing my best. And, you know, I get to enjoy that as well. So we'll see. And then I see the joy that it brings me and the fellowship it does. You know, I've got a cigar fellowship at home. We get together every Thursday and have a puff and just get real with each other and, you know, check in with each other. It's a little, you know, there's a few guys in the area that are not very social. And we get together once a week, and that is it. They're looking forward to that day of the week, which I enjoy, you know. And when I'm not there, they got the code to the garage. They get into my house, and they enjoy it while I'm away, too, which is very cool. And just to know that people are, you know, gathering and getting together at my place when I'm not there, is that wouldn't have happened earlier on, opening up my house to that. It's just, it's kind of a, it's an unwind. It's kind of a meditation. It's a, I like to have a cigar, just go out and sit on the porch and just slow down, get quiet. And then, of course, there's the taste of it, which is a big part of it. You know, I'm not going to just sit there and smoke something somebody gives me, you know. Again, it's a guy thing that there's little trinkets and cutters and lighters and paraphernalia that goes along with it. And you want to have the coolest one, and it's great gift giving stuff too. But it is a, it's not a kind of welcomed thing most places. And there's probably the rebel part in me that still enjoys the, sir, you're not supposed to smoke here. It's like, yeah, I know. You know, it's just odd. It's an expression of freedom for myself, but yeah, it's not for everybody, and that's fine. And it's just a connection that I enjoy with some people.
I just love picturing this whole club that he's got going on it in his hometown and this little sense of community that's established over cigar smoking. It's fascinating to me. It's a brotherhood for sure. And now the whole process of these different cigars coming together, the hows and the whys sort of stuff, that was something I wanted to hear more about from James. So that's what we asked.
Well, obviously, Rob Dietrich, our master distiller for Blackened Whiskey, he has an amazing group of taste buds, I guess I would say, and he can tell what certain things are mixed with and whatnot. Obviously, he's a chemist of sorts, and the tasting of things is what he does best, and he enjoys cigars, and we would enjoy a cigar here or there together. And he brought up the idea of, hey, why don't we blend something? I've got a buddy at Drew Estate, you know, Jonathan, and he's interested in doing it. And the thing that I did like about them is they had done it before with M&M. They had done a Slim Shady smoke. And it was actually a really good cigar. So I was excited to do that. And they sent me a huge shipment of different stuff to try. And we sat down, me and Rob, and me individually with my cigar group and taking notes on what we like, what we don't like. And yeah, came up with a blend that was way too strong. And it kicked our asses. So that is the M81. It is a strong cigar. It's a triple Maduro, which is a darker leaf. So we're coming out with another Halo brand that's got like a Connecticut wrap that's a little lighter. It's just another fun, cool thing to be able to say you've got your own cigar. And they really do taste good. And yeah, my cigar group enjoys them.
Interesting stuff to the already admitted non-smoker that I am. It sounds like the S84 Shade to Black is perhaps a slightly more universal cigar than that S81. Rob, James, I am learning.
Look at you.
But I have to say, when James said something about his ass being kicked by a cigar, I wondered what that meant.
Well, most of the time, it depends on the size. It depends on the how long you've been sitting down. You know, if you're sitting down for an hour smoking one of these and then you get up, you can tell that, wow, this has affected me a little bit. You know, you get a little, it's strange. It's like there's a calming factor to it, but there's obviously a nicotine. It gives you a jolt of something. And it depends on how much you're inhaling from the air as well. But yeah, it gives you a little boost here and there. Everyone's got their own taste. Everyone wants to be able to taste a guitar or taste a cigar. You can taste a guitar too. Taste a cigar and actually still function, you know. And some are just don't do anything. And so finding that right combination is what we've been after.
For me, I'd rather taste the guitar. It's nice to hear from James on the pleasure that this brings him. We've all seen the video clips over the internet with James beaming as he enjoys his cigar from the side of the M72 stage.
And one of the coolest things about this whole collaboration between Drew Estate and Blackened with the cigars is that when you get one of these cigars, you are getting the essence of James, a little slice of who he's about, what he's about, who he is, what he enjoys. What could be cooler than that?
Let's talk Factor Meals for just a second. Steph, you know that I take care of Dad and cook for him nightly, and Factor Meals saved me this week. I mean, big time. Normally, he's a really picky eater, but this was a winner.
Yes, your dad has a gourmet palate, and these Factor Meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, pre-prepared meals that are delivered to your door, and they're ready to heat and eat whenever you are.
And Factor Meals has a lot of options for the fancy palate, as my dad's is, and for those with dietary needs as well. 35 different options, to be precise, ranging from keto to calorie smart to vegan and veggie too.
In minutes, you will have a delicious meal that is full of flavor, as your father did. And the spices these chefs use are incredible. So not only is it convenient and nutritious, there are also some proper gourmet elements involved in Factor Meals.
Yeah, restaurant quality, feel good meals. Gotta love them.
Yep, Factor Meals is less expensive than takeout, and it's also healthier. What's not to like about that? So head to factormeals.com, Metallica50, and use code Metallica50. You will then get 50% off.
That's right. The code is Metallica50 at factormeals.com, Metallica50, to get 50% off.
Yeah. That was a small taste of Infectious Grooves, the West Side funk groove, punk metal group that's had Renee dancing all week. They were formed back in 1989 by Mike Muir with Rob Trujillo. And how cool it is that they get to bring it in Infectious style once again for the short run in Australia and that Berkeley, California date.
I wish I could be there, but I can't, sadly. And as we said earlier, we sat down for a chat with Rob about everything going down, including suicidal tendencies and Ty playing the shows as well. So 3, 2, 1, action.
It's an interesting thing because every once in a while, and I mean like every 10 years or five, let's say 5 to 6 years or whatever, there's an opportunity. But 9 times out of 10, for whatever reason, I can't do anything with it. And that would be... you know, whether it's a one-off gig or something, you know, with Infectious Grooves. Now, Infectious Grooves was kind of like officially maybe I'd say my first band where I was kind of a primary contributor creatively and all that. And it was basically just a massive experiment at the time. I had joined Suicidal Tendencies and I had this idea to do this sort of bass-driven, funkified style of music mixed in with like thrash, ska, punk, having almost like Slayer meets James Brown, you know what I mean? And, you know, it came to fruition. We put out 3 albums back in the 90s that were a lot of fun and then kind of parted ways. I ended up actually joining Ozzy's band. Ozzy had originally sang on a song called Therapy off the first album. About 3 or 4 years later, I ended up joining, you know, his band. You were around back then, Stefan.
That's right.
And it was a great time.
Oh, yeah.
The way I look at it, in my career, like my journeys have been just like dreams come true. So back in the old days, you know, I'm playing parties. I'm 16, 17. I'm playing Black Sabbath. I'm playing Ozzy, you know, solo material. And then all of a sudden I'm in Ozzy's band. You know what I mean? And that dream comes true where I'm on stage with him. And then all of a sudden he's in the studio and he's tracking Therapy with the Infectious Grooves. But then you've got Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies. I didn't really know him around the neighborhood down in on the west side of LA, but I was a big fan of the music and the band. And then next thing you know, again, on stage, guy writing songs, that, you know, then that rolls into Metallica and it kind of, and I, you know, and it, so it's kind of, for me, it's like I'm living my dream, you know, with all these incredible heroes of mine, including Lars, James, and Kirk. And I always, this is important to understand, you always got to stay grounded. You got to understand and appreciate all of those opportunities and those experiences. So I just want to start there because to me, that's what's happened in my life. You know, Jerry Cantrell, just really, really special, I guess, creative, collaborative, you know, existence in my world. And I appreciate all of it.
Well, so what's going on now with Infectious Grooves? So we got a little bit of the background. So
there's the background. So basically, as Mike Muir does, when he sees there might be a couple months or whatever off, you know, and if the stars align and he's available, because he's also got Suicidal Tendencies actively doing their thing. And of course, I played with Suicidal Tendencies for 9 years, but Suicidal's still active. And in fact, my son Ty tours with them. Every once in a while, I get a message about Infectious Grooves. And again, like I said, 9 times out of 10, I can't do anything about it because I'm busy. You know, I've got other things. You know, there's also domestic existence too.
You know, that is part of it. Yeah.
You know, and it just so happened that after an extensive couple years with Metallica, and we're still going, there's this break. And at the same time that there was this break, there's also a break for Mike Muir and his schedule, to where there was this opportunity to do a handful of shows. And, you know, I looked into my schedule and talked to some of my people, and I was like, oh, I can actually do this fairly comfortably, I might add. So, you know, I just basically jumped on board. And in that sort of, I guess you could say, preparation stage, it was like, hey, let's do a couple warm-up shows in Los Angeles, because we haven't played in 10, 12 years. We've done like 1 or 2 shows in like 20 years. So it's, we're maybe not the most fine-tuned machine, but, you know, so it's important to kind of get what we can in. And it's also humbling because these are clubs. I mean, this isn't like large-scale venues. So it's nice to kind of reconnect with the spirit of that and to get back to the clubs and understand what that means. And it can be humbling, but it's also grounding. You know, sometimes it's nice to do that sort of thing. In fact, interesting story, a little sidetrack here, but before I joined Metallica, I actually went on tour with Black Label Society, and we were playing small clubs, and I went on tour with Jerry Cantrell's solo band at the time, and I was working with Ozzy already, but I had the time to do this, and I felt that it was important for me to connect with the spirit of that and to kind of humble myself and get away from maybe the larger scale shows with Oz, and something told me I needed to do that before I was going to jump on board potentially with Metallica. Like, I had to earn it, you know. It was like, no, you've got to earn Metallica. You're not, you know, you've been doing this with Ozzy and you've done other things, but you know what, you got to get back to your roots and you've got to earn this. And in a weird way in my brain, it was like I had to earn that. Was part of my journey to get the actual Metallica gig, was to get back to the bars and the clubs.
So it's interesting, Zap. So are you saying it feels almost like a grounding again, like you're regrounding yourself a little bit by doing this, that you're getting back into like, hey, I'm checking back in and, you know,
kind of
sweaty in the small spaces?
Kind of, because it's like every once in a while, at least everybody's different. You know, everybody's different. Some people are like, I ain't going back to no bars. Hell no, I already paid my dues. I get that. You know, at the same time for me, you know, yeah, there are times where I'm like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't want it any other way. I feel blessed. And at the same time, it's like, it's kind of scary and interesting and nice to be able to like try and get back to a bar or a club, you know, and every once in a while, I think it's good for you. It's good for the soul. I know even with Kirk, you know, when we do the wedding band, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if anyone's going to show up. It's just know.
Those wedding band sets are insane.
But
you guys keep going.
No, but it's a good kind of nervousness. But I mean, really, you're playing a show after you just played on stage with Lars and James for 2 hours? I mean, it's kind of crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, you know, Kirk's a little loco like that, and so am I.
And you're not. You know, Renee, sometimes when I'm sitting in the van, I'm waiting for Rob to do his quick change, because as I've said on this pod before, Rob very kindly gives me a ride out of the gig, and I usually thrust a microphone in his face. What do you think? And he's like, very gamely gives me an answer. But what I now wonder is if this guy like has an Energizer bunny, like sort of like battery compartment, and he just switches batteries and then goes, because it's insane. I mean, you talk about it as though, I would just do a little spot. Those wedding band gigs were 3 hours, right? I mean, those are long gigs, and you're still...
Those were long gigs, yeah.
You're a man. You're a man who connects with that energy. I mean, you're very feral in that way, and I mean that praiseworthy. And I've got to say, talking of feral and talking of vibe, I mean, if anyone gets the chance, and you should look this up online, the poster art for not just these warm-up shows in LA, which are taking place at the Gardenia Amphitheatre, March 23rd, 24th, the poster art for Australia... It's insane. I mean, I don't think I've seen music as clearly depicted by the art, because it is absolute chaos but of the greatest kind. It's like, you know, it's timeless. It's got a vibe, man. It's crazy. So I know you love your art. I know you love this stuff. So let's talk about these. Let's talk about the visual representation.
Well, one of the things about kind of the universe that I currently live in have always been connected to is, when I say currently, it's just that my family is that my wife and my daughter, you know, Chloe and Lula, are avid passion driven artists. Ty even does his kind of weird punk rock surrealistic artwork. So we have art every day in this house. And one of the things for me is, I don't know, man, that's the kid in me. I grew up with comic books. I used to draw when I was younger, and I love kind of graphic layouts. I love the challenge of putting together, even if it's for nothing in particular. I just like to put together poster art and create interesting things, you know. And sometimes I'll, well, oftentimes I have friends that are better illustrators or graphic artist kind of help me with things, but it's always sort of my crazy vision, you know? And the other thing too, that's important is filmmaking. You know, I over the years, whenever I get a chance, every once in a while, I'll do something with film or music video. And in the last sort of 3 or 4 years, I've been slowly putting together kind of an infectious grooves oriented film, which is kind of, crazy. Yeah. With Paul Marchand, my friend and a great director from the Jaco Pastorius doc film that I did. So every once in a while, there's this kind of crazy film, you know, maker angle to my existence. And that's just how it is, man. I don't know what to say. I love it all. I love the challenge. And it does feel great when people acknowledge and respect some of these little departures from just playing bass.
I know Renee's going to come in with a question in a minute. I've got to just ask this, though. I mean, when we look at these posters, I mean, is this a view inside your head?
Yeah, I mean, basically it is. I, you know, when I was thinking about Australia, I had, you know, I love the Mad Max films. And I don't know, there's something there that resonates.
You've got flying sharks, tanks. Well, Mad Max. You've got some crazy dude. Wave. I mean, I'm liking the inside of your head. It's very different to how you come across.
It's all my fears, man. Great white sharks from surfing, clowns, wild dogs. It's all a part of kind of that dream world that I live in. And it's my safety net or my release. Bring it out in a poster.
It has that Furry Freak Brothers. Remember the Furry Freak Brothers?
Oh, yeah. You're bang on with that. Yeah.
I mean, it's like I love all of the Ed Roth, you know, kind of vibe and, you know, Rat Fink and all that. That's why you have the characters with Infectious Grooves and tied into that and other things. I mean, there's so much of that has been a part of my creative existence and it's still there. It's like sometimes I'm pulling this stuff out from the treasure chest from, you know, 30 years ago. And it's like, in fact, if you think about it, I mean, Infectious Grooves has existed now for 35 years. And before the pandemic, we were supposed to do one or two shows. I think one of them was Hellfest and it didn't happen. And then of course, you know, with Metallica, we started writing and recording and then going on tour. But back then, you know, was supposed to do something and that got put off for about 5 years. So it's just every once in a while, if I can, I try to do it, you know. And the last time I think we played was maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. Like I said, I think it's been maybe 2 gigs or 3 gigs in 20 years. It's like, you know, but this one, yeah, I mean, yeah, we're going to Australia. And to be honest, I haven't been to Australia in about 12 years and Infectious Grooves hasn't been to Australia in like 30 years. So I don't know what it's going to be like. We may play the crickets, but I don't care. It'll be fun. I get to go
surf. That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. How are you going to spend your week there besides playing the gigs? Are you going to get some surfing in there?
Yeah. Well, Kirk and I, that's one of the things. I think some of our funnest tours have always been in Australia because Kirk and I would basically kind of parlay the gigs with surf excursions. Fortunately, we had so many friends, or we still do. I mean, most of our friends that were pro surfers literally were Australians. So we had this connection to all these Australian pro surfers through Metallica. And even before that, I remember playing a backyard party in Sydney when I was in Suicidal Tendencies. And again, hanging out with all the pro surfers back then in like 1995 or whatever it was. So there's always been a connection to kind of the surfer brotherhood in Australia. And it's weird because you'd run into these guys in like Hawaii, LA, you know, during the surf competitions. And it's kind of like, there they are.
Yeah, you just over saw there. Them, yeah.
Thousands, you know, thousands of miles away. In Australia too, you know, when it goes surfing, I mean, I'm sorry, in Europe too, you know, go surfing in southwest of France and I'd run into some of these guys. So they're just kind of everywhere.
Let's just give a shout out to the Australians here. They're a good laugh. Yeah. They are. They're just so, easygoing and they're easy flowing. And I mean, you know, not to overview too much, but it's hard not to have a good time in Australia, right?
Yeah. I think we used to drive some of our Metallica crew members a little crazy because we'd have like 40 Ozzy's hanging out backstage with their getting their drink on. And
they, I mean, what could possibly go wrong, mate? They're like,
who are these guys? Yeah, bro, man, yeah, cook, yeah, mate. And it's like, and they get so pissed off at us, you know, our crew, the Metallica crew, because it's like, who are these guys? You know, it's like, oh, those are Robin Kirk's friends. Oh my God.
Robert, I want to ask you, because Suicidal Tendencies is on this bill in Australia, so that means Ty is coming along.
Yeah.
Is this the first time you get to tour with your son on the bill with you?
Yeah, what's exciting about that, and part of the reason, to be honest, is surfing. He was actually, he was just there a couple months ago, but yeah, for us to travel, take a journey like this together. And
okay, do you have to room together? You have to share a room? Does the tour budget expand to you each?
I don't know. That's a good question, actually.
You might end up rooming with him, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I might have to sleep on his floor.
Yeah. You might have to sleep with under his rules. He might be telling you how it's going.
Exactly. Right.
So there's going to be Mike Muir's doing double duty there. I'm sure you'll end up doing. I mean, is it fair to say you'll probably, you know, we'll probably find you jamming here and there on the odd Suicidal song, right? I mean, that's just the way these things work out. I'm not committing you to anything on air, but
a couple of the songs, you know, obviously with my history and my collaborative history, there's definitely a couple songs that I'd like to play if it's okay, if it'll let me. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a no rules plan, but sometimes those are the funnest, you know, just to go and have a good time and take it all in, you know, the whole experience, you know, and it's short. I mean, it's literally like 10 days or whatever. That's I'm home, literally home by the 8th or 9th of April. So there's a lot going on, as you know, in that sort of couple weeks. At a certain point, you just kind of go, all right, let's go, you know, jump in the water and swim, because there is a lot going on even beyond that particular tour.
But I got to ask you, I mean, Mike Muir's name has come up several times already in our chat. I mean, Mike has a vibe for sure. I think that that's an understatement. I mean, I've got to ask you, I mean, is Mike actually as scary as he comes across?
It's interesting because before I joined the band, I only heard the tales, the stories and the punk rock folklore, which, you know, is pretty frightening, to be honest. And and then I end up joining the band, and he's a great friend. He's a great person. He's a great human being and incredibly intelligent, but I wouldn't want to cross him on a bad day. And, and they're just people like that. You know, there's people that are very intense in a lot of ways, whether it's through their creativity or just I don't know.
It's incredible what he's done. I mean, as you said,
if you listen to that first album,
super indie,
if you listen to that first album, Institutionalized, I mean, if for those who haven't heard that, you know, released I think in 1983, you got to hear that, because that's almost like the punk rock Bible, especially for the US. Just brilliant. I mean, like I said, again, going back to earlier, I mean, I've been able to create and collaborate with my heroes, him being one of them. And yeah, he's a solid person.
But as you said, I mean, much respect to Mike. I mean, my word, I mean, he has sustained the Suicidal, the legacy and the present Suicidal, all of it. He's just maintained it, completely independently. I mean,
Really,
really great, completely independent. So much respect. And obviously, you know, the question was a little tongue in cheek. I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, no,
it's a little tongue in cheek. I mean, and I'm sure that if
slightly,
Mike is listening,
mate, slightly.
I'm sure if Mike is listening, he will chuckle that I asked that question, and I'm sure he wouldn't be completely upset.
That's pretty funny, Steph, but you better mind your P's and Q's when you go to that Berkeley gig. Don't get Mike mad at you.
Don't worry. I'll be my usual polite self.
Good to hear. That's all for this week. But really quickly, we still have the monthly exclusive Metallica merch package giveaway. It's going on right now. If you haven't entered the contest yet, please do it. All you got to do is follow and share this podcast to be entered. Head to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica to enter, and good luck.
And see you next week when, among other things, we'll be talking Metallica, Elton, and Bernie. So until then,
see ya.
The Metallica Report is produced by Metallica HQ, Pantheon Media, and Popcult.
If you like what we're doing here, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to visit Metallica.com/podcast to submit your questions, offer your thoughts, and become a part of this podcast.
Copyright 2023, all rights reserved.